Hey everybody, welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen, I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com. Joining me shortly is Chris Biederman, the 49ers beat writer over at the Sacramento Bee. Sorry there was no pod earlier this week, had a small technical hiccup, and by small I mean big technical hiccup, where we were not able to recover the recording for the episode. So that's why there was no episode earlier this week. We are going to recap that episode today for you. This comes out Friday. We're recording it Thursday night. We'll recap quickly our episode from earlier this week, and then next week we will get back on track. And talking about the 49ers offseason, and we're starting to hit that weird point in the middle of the offseason where there's not a ton going on, but we'll continue to bring you content because that's what we are committed to doing. So here is our quick recap of the episode that you did not hear unless you were on Locker Room earlier this week.
Blue Wire. Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Kittle in Denver territory! Kittle is gonna go! Touchdown!
Bosa's got him, and a sack him back inside the 30-yard line. Nick Bosa drops Aaron Rodgers for a 13-yard loss.
Quick pass caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in! Touchdown!
All right, Chris, we're in full heat-beating season.
We are.
It is not a game anymore. I'm getting ready to put my jeans away. I'm going to go shorts. And we're keeping windows closed until later in the evening. And that means that we're hitting the point of the summer where 49ers things are going to kind of grind to a halt before training camp.
Yeah, and I'm going up to Santa Rosa this weekend for Memorial Day weekend, and I couldn't be more excited because it's going to be like a reunion with all the high school friends that I haven't gotten to see in a long time. And playing golf on Sunday, it's going to be like 90-plus degrees in Windsor, which is going to be a little bit rough when it comes to beating the heat. But I'll be wearing sunscreen. I'll be staying cool.
Yeah, we'll make honestly, it happen. Honestly, I don't mind it so much because when you golf the way I do, you spend so much time under the trees that it's not so bad when it's a little bit hot out. So the 49ers began their OTAs Monday this week. You guys were out there on Tuesday. That's what our podcast was about. And we wound up doing a 48-minute locker room on OTAs. We're going to whittle that conversation down quite a bit here. Yeah. The big thing to watch and the overarching theme is there's not a lot to take away from OTAs. The reps are so limited. What you guys see in practice is so limited. But still, the thing worth watching more than anything is the quarterback, I'm going to call it a battle, but the distribution of reps between Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. The question I think is how much is going to happen, if anything, during OTAs in that quarterback battle, or is it just about laying the foundations for where the Garoppolo-Lance race is going to start once camp picks up?
Yeah, so when, you know, Trey Lance is just not in position to overtake Jimmy Garoppolo right now because everything is so new. He's been learning the offense for a matter of weeks. Garoppolo's been here for, you know, going on 4 years now. So he has a clear advantage. He understands the offense. He's a team captain. He has all that going for him, and it's going to take Trey Lance beating him out to win the job, or at least making it close enough for the coaching staff and everybody on the roster to be like, all right, you know, we should probably roll with Trey because Trey's clearly the more talented guy and the guy they invested so much in. So it's not going to get to that point for a while. I think training camp, you know, the end of August and potentially early September is when all that stuff is going to come to a head. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what's going to happen over these next few weeks, I think there's still 3 weeks of OTAs to go, including the mandatory session in mid-June. So there's going to be plenty of time for this thing to play out. I still expect Trey Lance to give Jimmy Garoppolo a real run for his money as soon as week one. And I think a fair over-under is that bye week in week six, which we've talked about on previous episodes, to say, all right, maybe that's the demarcation point in where this thing changes, particularly if Jimmy Garoppolo isn't lights out and the 49ers lose a few of their games to start the year in September and October. So the thing to take away from OTAs for me isn't necessarily quarterback related. It's just the fact that everybody who's healthy is there. And, you know, Fred Warner is practicing and participating in 11-on-11 drills, despite not having a new contract, which he's due for this offseason. And that's pretty rare, right? And he was talking about it earlier this week, basically saying, I could get hurt walking across the street. It's really important for us to improve, for me to improve, all of those things. And it's just not a common thing in the league anymore, particularly with the NFLPA telling everybody, you know, to avoid the offseason program. And I think, you know, that they make fair points in wanting to do that, but the 49ers players are just seem like they're all bought in. And so that to me is really notable, because, you know, you look at the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, and this is from Joe Fan, our buddy, Pete Carroll said that there are 35 guys at Seahawks OTAs. The Niners have their full healthy roster there. The only guys who weren't there at the facility when we were there this week were Nick Bosa and Dee Ford. And Nick Bosa is obviously recovering from his ACL tear in Florida. Kyle Shanahan said they're checking in with him regularly, and he expects Bosa to be a full go by the time training camp comes around. And Ford had been at the facility for months and months this offseason, rehabbing his back injury. And it got to the point where Kyle Shanahan said he had to tell Dee Ford to leave, you know, go to your hometown, go spend some time with your family. And he's optimistic sort of about Ford potentially being available at some point in August. So, you know, I'm still dubious about Ford's availability at all early in the season if he does come back. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But to me, the bigger story than the quarterback stuff is just the buy-in from the roster, because it's pretty clear there's a lot of urgency right now in May for these guys to improve, and they want to bounce back in you know, badly after going 6-10 last year. So that to me was the big takeaway, is that this team collectively is really focused, and it seems like everybody's in a pretty good place from a, you know, a culture standpoint. Some of that stuff can get overstated a little bit, but just the vibe around the team right now is pretty good. And I think they're going to hit the ground running in training camp, while other teams like the Seahawks only have 35 guys there during OTAs, might be a little bit further behind come August.
It's almost like a carryover of, and I know it's not necessarily the exact same team, but they went into 2020 with this whole revenge tour thing, right? They were going to avenge their loss in the Super Bowl and they were going to come back. And then they just kind of hit a wall in week two. Right. When Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas all went down. Dee Ford went down in week one. Richard Sherman went down in week one. I mean, that's like...
George Kittle.
George Kittle went down in week one. That's like five of their six most important players all went down in the first 2 weeks. So it's like they never got that chance to really get back in the saddle and try and defend the NFC crown. And it feels a little bit now, based on what you're saying from the number of players there and all, and the work that guys are putting in to try and get back from injury, it feels a little bit like this is a more focused version of that. It's not just this emotional pissed off, we're going to go avenge the Super Bowl loss. It's more of a like, okay, this is a team that can win the Super Bowl. They know what that's going to take, and they're executing that now that they can be there in person.
Yeah, they want to prove that they're the 2019 team. They're that, right. You know, they're one of the best teams in the league, and that they are not what they were last year, which was a team that ended up with a 12th pick in the draft. So obviously there's a lot of urgency, like, there's a lot of urgency, but it's what's so fascinating about it is it's a team that considers itself a real contender that's also going through a weird quarterback situation. and a potential transition, right? So that's really fascinating. I think, you know, you try to rack your brain, like, what team has, like, has gone through this recently? And it just sort of popped into my head before we were recording. And it's like, I think the most analogous situation is actually the Patriots from, like, 2014 through 2017 with Jimmy Garoppolo and Tom Brady. The only difference is, you know, you thought that Jimmy Garoppolo would eventually unseat Tom Brady because Tom Brady was in his mid-30s and was going to retire eventually. So you could, you know, it would be a smooth handoff. It wasn't the Patriots investing 3 first-round picks and drafting Jimmy Garoppolo 3rd overall like the Niners did Trey Lance. But that's just sort of like, it's just such a weird situation. That's the only team I could think of that's sort of gone through something similar in recent seasons. And I could be wrong about that, but, you know, they're in such a fascinating place in their history right now. And it seems like the locker room is handling everything really well. And I even asked Fred Warner about it. You know, like, as a team captain, just like, you know, are you at all concerned about it getting weird because you do have this awkward sort of quarterback situation coming up? And he basically shrugged it off and said, no, we're all pros. Like, you know, it's all competition, et cetera, et cetera. And mm-hmm. you know, that could be platitudes, but it could also just be like, this is a very veteran team that's experienced, that's been through the battles with Jimmy Garoppolo, and they know what the deal is because Jimmy Garoppolo's been hurt and his injuries have basically cost him 2 of the last 3 years. So the takeaway for me from OTAs is just that it seems like the foundation inside the locker room is in a good enough spot to absorb whatever awkwardness could come from this looming quarterback battle whenever that does happen. And it's probably going to be August and September.
And that's not to say there aren't still plenty of questions to answer. They're not going to be able to culture their way back to the Super Bowl. Like, they're going to need a lot of things to go right. But if, given what you can learn from OTAs, which is not a lot, frankly, but given what you can learn from OTAs, if you're charting a path back to the Super Bowl for San Francisco, this is probably where it starts.
Yeah.
Again, there's a long way to go and a ton of hurdles. And even if they're healthy, they need everything to kind of go right. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. It's a tough division. It's going to be hard to just get back to the postseason. Plus, like we said, they're dealing with the Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo thing. So, like I said, this is not to say that, oh, chalk them up or pencil them in as the NFC rep in the Super Bowl, but they're in a good spot, all things considered, where they could be.
Yeah, and put it this way, and I think you make a really good point, but to say it another way is that if they do have a successful season and it includes a deep run into the postseason, they're going to talk about it. It's like it started in May, like the journey started in May.
Yep.
And with, you know, the Seahawks having 35 guys at their OTAs and it mostly being their rookie class, like their journey, whatever that is, isn't going to start until training camp. So theoretically, the 49ers could have a pretty significant advantage given that they're already going through these practices and everybody's already in the building. And they're, you know, working pretty hard to get better ahead of training camp. So that could give them an advantage, and I think the players realize it. Kyle Shanahan's thrilled about it, and it just does sort of speak to, you know, the culture that they've cultivated there. Now, whether or not that translates to wins and losses is another thing, but it certainly doesn't hurt to, you know, if you're a fan of the 49ers, you should probably be encouraged by the idea that everybody's working in May. They're not skipping OTAs. This is a team that's focused on getting back early on, while, you know, a few other teams aren't.
I want to shift gears real quick to one of the other storylines kind of looming over the 49ers offseason at present, is the Julio Jones trade rumors. It was reported today by Diana Rossini of ESPN that the Falcons were offered a first-round pick for Julio Jones as they're shopping him. He has requested a trade. The 49ers and Kyle Shanahan have been connected to Jones, not just because of the familiarity between those two, but because of San Francisco's need for another receiver, I think.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. the money doesn't work straight across. Let's say the 49ers, the picks don't matter. Let's say they package a couple picks that Atlanta wants and they send Jones to San Francisco. Jones is due a $15.3 million or carries a $15.3 million salary cap hit this year. That doesn't fit under where the 49ers are. How would they create that space? Because from what I understand, it wouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah, they don't have the space because they still do have to sign their top three draft picks, Trey Lance, Aaron Banks, and Trey Sermon. And I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head how much that's going to cost, but they only have like $17 million in space. Obviously, they can't do that and insert Julio Jones, $15.3 million, just into their cap situation. So what they can do is they can look at some of their veterans on bigger contracts, not even including Jimmy Garoppolo, or potentially D Ford, who may or may not play this year and may or may not come off the books at some point over the next two seasons. But, you know, Eric Armstead can get restructured. Jimmy Ward can get restructured and or extended. Fred Warner is going to sign his extension, and there's a chance that they backload that like they have other contracts and shrink his cap number from $3.3 million this year to even smaller. And you know, create more cap space. And then the other thing, because Julio Jones only has $2 million guaranteed for 2022 and no guarantees for 2023, the 49ers could say, hey, Julio, why don't we guarantee you some money for 2022 and then shrink your cap hit from, you know, shrink it in half from 15.3 to 7.5. That's a possibility too. So there are a bunch of different avenues the 49ers could make this work. I think, you know, the financial implications of Jones's contract, as long as he doesn't want a new deal upon getting traded, which, I mean, he has 3 years left on his deal and he's still getting a lot of money from the Falcons in terms of, you know, the prorated bonuses. That current deal he signed in 2019 pays him $41 million in bonuses, and the 49ers don't have to worry about that. Or that, I should say, the team trading for Julio Jones doesn't have to worry about any of that bonus money because that's all on the Falcons' term sheets, right? So basically, the 49ers are only absorbing the base salary, and they're with 3 years left and no guarantees in 2023. In the last year of that deal, they can manipulate it to the point where they can shrink his cap number two on top of the other restructures they could do already on the books. And that's not even accounting for, like I said, potentially getting rid of Jimmy Garoppolo and his $24 million either this year or next year. They're, you know, the 49ers are in a spot where they could absolutely absorb Julio Jones. I think the issue that they might have is not their own cap situation. It's the market, right? It's are they going to be able to give teams draft picks that satisfy, or give the Falcons draft picks that satisfy their demands, right? Because if another team offers a 2 and a 4, that other team is probably going to pick ahead of the 49ers. You know, if the 49ers got Julio Jones, they're probably picking in the late 20s or maybe, you know, 31, 32.
Right, yeah.
If they get Julio Jones. So the Falcons could look at that and say, well, why don't we trade him to Tennessee, who's probably not going to win the Super Bowl even with Julio Jones, and maybe we get earlier picks than that. So that's the issue the 49ers are going to run into when it comes to getting Julio Jones if they want him, not the salary cap stuff.
Right, and if a team offers a first, it's done. It's what happened with the Matthew Stafford thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Our friend pointed out this, or somebody we both know pointed this out to us that if the Falcons got offered a first round pick, they probably would have taken it already. Right. And this trade isn't going to happen until after June 1st, regardless, just because of the cap figures and how all that works. With Julio, but like if he were going to get dealt for a first round pick and a first round pick's already on the table, like the Falcons probably would have taken it already. So
right, yeah, they're not going to shop around and see if there's another first round pick available.
Right, it's not often, you know, 32-year-old receivers go for packages that include first round picks. I mean, hell, even, you know, Trent Williams, one of the best left tackles in football, with a few years left, only went for a third and a fifth.
Right.
You know, so I think a second and a fourth would potentially make sense. Maybe a second and a third if the Niners are really desperate for him. But then you're talking about not picking. I mean, you don't have first round picks the next 2 years. So they're probably not going to give away consecutive picks in the same draft. It might be similar to what they did with Trent and split those picks up over, you know, different years in 22 and 23. But no, I think it could absolutely happen.
It's on
the table, and I don't think they passed. Like, I don't think it was an accident they didn't draft a receiver, because they had a pretty clear need that they needed one. You know, or it was pretty apparent that they needed one, and you know, this is sort of similar to 2019 when they went into the year potentially needing a third receiver, and then they went and got Emmanuel Sanders. So you know, like it sort of feels like they're in a similar situation from a receiver standpoint. And like I said, I think the money stuff, they can make it work pretty easily as long as Julio Jones is amenable and doesn't need, you know, I mean, look, his cap, if he stays with the Falcons, his cap number is $23 million this year, 19.26 in 22 and 23 with the Falcons.
The Falcons have like $110 in cap space. And yeah. I don't know why they restructured Matt Ryan's deal the way they did when they were picking fourth. And they could just draft a quarterback and not carry. I have no idea. I have no idea what the Falcons are doing.
Yeah. You'd think drafting Kyle Pitts means, all right, we're all in on this season.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess if Julio Jones were requesting a trade.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He did request a trade.
Still, it's fascinating. That organization, the 49ers face them in week 15.
And, you know, if you're trying to get a rookie quarterback ingratiated into the NFL, getting him Julio Jones to pair with everything else that offense already has wouldn't be the worst thing, in my opinion.
Right? Quick question. I agree. I completely agree. And on that note, the reason I thought of this is you brought up the rookie quarterback angle of this. Bill Barnwell at ESPN, he floated the trade idea of a second round pick and Laviska Shenault from the Jags to Atlanta for Julio. Would you do a, let's call it a third and Deebo Samuel for Julio Jones?
Yeah, probably.
I have a tough time with that one because Samuel is so dynamic and young, and if you trade a receiver for Julio Jones, you still have a problem with not having a really good third option. But I'm not sure how important that's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, if you have George Kittle, Julio Jones, and Brandon Ayuk, you're probably doing fine.
Yeah,
if you don't have Deebo, the Samuel, I'm glad you included Samuel in that. Because the conversation around him over these next couple seasons is going to be fascinating, right?
Yes.
Because there are so many receivers in the league right now. And it seems like every year there's just a handful of stars in each draft.
Mm-hmm.
And if Deebo Samuel is really productive over the next two seasons, are you going to pay him $20 million a year atop the receiver market when you could pretty easily find a replacement for cheaper, and your Kyle Shanahan, who can, you know, maximize or get guys open in a way that's pretty unique, right?
It's like running backs.
Yeah, basically. Receivers are the new running backs in a way. I think that's an interesting way to
put it. Receivers and running backs don't matter. No joke.
don't get me started on the matter thing. But the point is, like, Deebo Samuel, who's had an injury history in college and now in the pros, are you really committing, you know, $15, $20 million a year to that when you could just draft a guy in the second round to replace him, which is essentially what the Steelers have been doing?
And by that point, he's due for an extension after this year and then has one more year left. And by the end of his rookie contract, you'll have a pretty good idea on whether or not you're paying Trey Lance. Or you're going to have to start budgeting for Trey Lance. Nick Bosa will have had his extension by then. Fred Warner will have had an extension by then.
Right.
I think it's going to be really difficult to unless Samuel comes out and is like rushing for 800 yards and racking up 1,000 yards receiving, which is I don't think he is. I have a hard time imagining they're going to want to pay him. But again, like you said, that's going to be a conversation that I think continues over the next couple years and is going to depend a lot on his productivity, which may see a little bit of a decrease if they wind up trading for Julio Jones.
Yeah, and it's why if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm drafting a receiver during the first three rounds in every draft.
Yeah.
Which he pretty much has done, except this year.
Unless you're drafting Julio Jones, unless you draft Julio Jones, which would be wild in the second or third round, if you draft a player like that, then you know, you pay them.
Right.
But I imagine it's going to be a cycle every 3 or 4 years of just kind of new blood at receiver. But I don't think that should stop them if the price is a second and a fourth from getting Julio Jones, because then they might already have the best offense in the NFC West. If they add Julio Jones, they have a chance to be one of the best offenses in all of football, Chiefs included.
Yeah, and like getting Julio Jones isn't necessarily just like, oh, the Niners need Julio Jones. It's also taking away Julio Jones from another Super Bowl threat, right? Mm. Like, if the Niners get Julio Jones...
Oh, if he doesn't get traded elsewhere.
Yeah, the Packers don't get...
Okay, sure.
If the Niners get Julio Jones, the Packers do not get Julio Jones. The Seahawks don't get Julio Jones. The Rams don't get Julio Jones.
None of the other 30 teams will be getting Julio Jones.
Yeah, they wouldn't. It would be the Niners. So it's that's something you have to factor into it, too, is that, you know, like... Do we just want to like pay a little bit more so he doesn't land elsewhere and we don't have to worry about going through Julio Jones in the playoffs? Like that's at least part of the conversation. I don't know how big of a part of the conversation it will be, but it's at least part of it. Because if Julio Jones goes to the Rams, you know, like that's really not a good development for the Niners, right?
Yeah, and I think too,
or the Packers.
Just to that point, I think the difference is. I think the difference is they're not going to go, all right, we'll go a second and a fourth, and then they find out that the Seahawks have a second and a third. I think that's where the Niners would maybe bump up their offer.
Yeah.
But they're not going to go, all right, we'll do a second and a fourth, and then the Falcons say, well, hey, the Seahawks have a first on the table. It's like, all right, Seahawks, you take them then.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Niners would... At. Yeah, the Niners would be happy for another team to give up a first for him. But, because they're not, I mean, they don't have first round picks to trade, so they would be SOL on that. But no, I do think it's a significant possibility, particularly just because this is like the Emmanuel Sanders and Trent Williams trades were very similar just in terms of situations to what a Julio Jones deal would look like right now. And given Kyle Shanahan's history and the fact that he's still one of the three or four best receivers in the league, like you absolutely have to consider it. And particularly if you're like, you know, like you want to help Trey Lance out, getting him Julio Jones is not going to hurt him at all. So it's we'll see. You know, I'm not reporting anything. I haven't heard anything from
unless
anybody. But
unless Julio Jones is a huge Jimmy G guy.
Elaborate.
I'm sorry.
What do you mean?
You said it would help Trey Lance. It's stupid. Forget
it.
Oh,
I got you. Julio Jones ruins the quarterback competition for Trey Lance.
Yeah, he's like, I need Jimmy Garoppolo to be the guy.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's get out of here.
Sure.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, enjoy your long weekends. Be safe. Don't forget what Memorial Day is all about, too. It's not just a long weekend to drink beer and party, even though, you know, some of us will be doing that. But there's an element to Memorial Day that's important that we should think about, too.
Reflect. What's the word I'm looking for? Reflect and just be thankful for the sacrifices people make.
Yeah.
So
put it this way.
Do what we do.
Put it this way. If we were not on the right side of World War II, your boy over here probably doesn't exist.
Hmm.
So.
That's a... Yes. Boy, this guy. Wow. I'm going to go now.
Yeah.
Let's... subscribe, rate, review if you have not. We really appreciate you guys. Like I said, we'll be back on a regular schedule next week. And again, apologies for the technical hiccup with no episode earlier this week. We'll keep you updated on all the latest 49ers news as always. Boom. So,